And our guest, Professor James McKenney, and whoa, the phones are lit up. We'll be back with him and your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We have to talk about this Pluto mission, if they can ever get this rocket ship off the ground, Jim, and then we'll go to calls. This is pretty dramatic, too. They can get it there in 9 years with a huge rocket and a whip-around effect around Jupiter. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah, amazing. To imagine seeing Pluto, our farthest planet, to understand what is going on out there, and I understand there's a couple new moons that they've discovered around Pluto now. So,
whatever they might be.
Right. Right. But, and then the other possibility is we start to look out farther. And that's like, it's like the Mesopotamians when they first crossed over that mountain ridge for the first time and realized that the firmament was not held up by the mountains. We just start to look out beyond that farthest, what we consider the farthest point in the solar system.
To the phones we go with Professor James McKenney. We'll go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi there, Doctor. This is George, I can't say last name, George from the Pittsburgh area.
George, go ahead.
Dr. McKenney, you got me excited when you started talking about the water rockets and that. And for history, I talked with a fellow by the name of John R. Searle and a fellow by the name of Dr. Roy Schultz. And Roy Schultz, I was able to get him to do a levitation device using Tesla-like technology and the Browning effect. But in history, because it's so simple, when you studied the ancient past there in the Spanish world, did they have levitation by air balloons or by silver or by their magnetic? Did you discover anything in your and water being a dipolar thing? Even the Germans were able to use that to levitate. Did you discover anything in that past history?
No, actually not. But it's a somewhat of a mystery. Some of the construction of rock cities, especially the Inca ones. Huge rocks, unusual shapes, all fit together perfectly with rounded corners. It just defies any type of modern technology. So something was going on that we don't know about. They do talk about giants living long ago, but these are bigger than any giant could pick up. So, but to answer your question, no, I did not discover any phenomenon or a methodology, say, of levitating or, that's inherent in what I've seen.
Okay, well, water rockets I fire off at 4-H, and they do go 60 feet with about 60 pounds. Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks. Appreciate you being on the program. Do you take many speaking engagements, Jim? Do you travel much anymore?
Not much anymore. It takes too much out of my current schedule. And so I've kind of limited that, and once in a great while I may do a public appearance. But what I found out is that I reach far more people on, say, radio or, a show like this. I can reach so many more people, and it's the time to effort ratio, and the number of people reached is much greater. So, my own work, if I disrupt it, then it takes a while to get everything rolling again.
Well, so, I get calls from guests who've been on the program before, and, the scope of the audience and the magnitude of the 500 station reach, they don't comprehend until after the interview. And then their websites are either cooked or, their books sell and they crawl up from 200,000th on Amazon.com to number 10. It's pretty dramatic.
Oh, the power of the show is amazing. And I'm so fortunate to be able to be on this show. You know, thank you very much. You know, and to get the message out there to that many people, it is amazing. And I've seen the power of this show and how it works.
Well, so. The thanks comes from us, Jim, because you provide an alternative thought, and I think that's important. It's important to this program to bring different views. And there aren't a lot of them out there that have your views, and, you know, it's refreshing to do that.
Well, good. That really, really works good for both of us.
To the phones we go, east of the Rockies. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hello, this is John from Springfield, Illinois.
Hi, John.
WTAX. I'd like to ask your guest, do you think the weather can be manipulated using those technology that you were talking about?
Oh, absolutely. And we've done some shows on this on Coast to Coast. There are numerous technologies that exist for manipulating weather. The HARP, of course, was one of the early technologies. The current technology of choice is the laser satellites, which basically drive electrical currents from the ionosphere, and you can move low-pressure cells, things like that.
And what is your idea on the last star that was just, they don't know if it's a planet or not, the 2003 UB313. What's your idea about that?
Which one is that now? I'm trying to think.
That's the one past Pluto. It's like 9 billion miles
okay.
out.
Yeah, that's one. Oh. They don't know if it's another planet or a moon or whatever it is.
Right.
The number is 2003 UB313, I believe.
Very good.
Yeah, it's hard to say what those are. There's the Kuiper objects, and there's so many post-Neptune objects. You know, dozens and dozens of them now. I think what we were talking about earlier, that they're just starting to discover these objects.
Do you ever, Jim, get into, I really do sound like Bones when I say that. You know? do you ever get into time travel and theories like that? You know, you are a physicist.
Right, I have yet to see what I would call proof of that. If you take just, say, moving at half the speed of light, the next star system is not that far away, you know, a number of years. And we spend, like you say, 9 years getting to Pluto if with the proper acceleration. And this is one thing you learn early in physics, is that just a small amount of acceleration. Say, and this is a problem you actually
By the way,
do.
11 hours to the moon. That's how fast this thing goes. It took the Apollo group 3 days,
right?
This thing will go past the moon in 11 hours.
Right, yeah.
I mean, boom.
If you accelerate at 32 feet per second, which is our gravitational field, and you just start going in one direction, you accelerate at that velocity, it's amazing how fast you will be going in, you know, a week or 2 weeks or a month. And so with that type of, with that thought, interstellar travel is not just with rudimentary Newtonian non-time travel type of scenarios. You can get there within a relatively reasonable amount of time.
What do you think of Richard's theory of the old switcheroo?
There's nobody on the planet that's going to disprove him, and it is a bit odd. Like he said, the best investigation now will not be able to disprove what he's saying. And therein lies the doubt. Can you imagine being one of those scientists really thinking about it and going, you know, do we really have the real stuff here? Are we looking at what we think we're looking at, or are we just being routed down the wrong road? This is what I call Tier 1 and Tier 2 science. Where the Tier 1 scientists get the good stuff and the Tier 2 scientists think they're the top scientists, but they're not.
He's going to be in Los Angeles for a conference on February 10th through the 12th. I'm going to be there. And I just know I'm going to get stuck buying him dinner. I just know it. And with Robin, whom I don't mind buying the dinner for, but he's got to come along. I know he's listening. I'm doing this on purpose. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, Steve in Phoenix.
Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
If one of these large comets comes into the solar system, how reliable is it predicted trajectory of the near-Earth asteroids. And let me explain why it's important. NASA says that on May 10th, 2007, an asteroid named Apollo is going to pass 2 days in front of the Earth, right through the equatorial plane. And when you go to Nostradamus, you repeatedly see May 10th being referred to as the world's greatest earthquake since man has been on the Earth. So is it possible that one of these comets could come up out of the south like Hale-Bopp did and delay this asteroid from getting here by 2 days?
Anything is possible. It's a big empty vacuum out there. Space is a very big place. Collisions are pretty rare amongst the larger things just because there's so few of them. But anything is possible, but...
No, I'm talking electrically or gravitationally. Would it be able to alter the speed so it may arrive 2 days late?
Well, perturbations are...
Nostradamus says May is the big date, but they don't say a year.
Right.
And here we are looking at May 8th.
Well, I don't pick dates. I know we've had scenarios where an asteroid was coming very close to Earth's path.
Well, we've got one in 2029 called Apophis, which is the destroyer. That's going to get really close, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And do comets come in the color red? Because I've never heard of a red comet.
Well, it depends on, let's take sulfur dioxide, which is a common chemical around Jupiter, orangish color. So there's many chemicals that could be reddish or orangish that would be accumulated in different parts of the solar system. There's a lot of sulfur dioxide in that Jupiter region out there.
Okay, and the reason I ask that is because of a Hopi legend that I heard since childhood that says there's two brothers that live south of the South Pole, the Blue Kachina and the Red Kachina.
Right, and what they're referring to is, in fact, they actually talked about the Blue Kachina being Hale-Bopp and the red one
supposed to come within half a generation.
Right.
And he's supposed to be the destroyer of worlds.
Right, exactly.
So
and I've heard that also. I've heard that also. But to say specifically a date or could something specifically, say, move the Apollo minor planet without real data, I couldn't say specifically, but anything is possible. Could it happen? The likelihood is very small, but then again, Earth has been hit by many things, and we've had many objects come by near us, causing what I call action at a distance. So even though it's unlikely, these things do happen.
What do you think about wormwood? What do you think that is, Jim?
Well, it's clear that wormwood, and the place where most people see the term wormwood, besides the herbal catalogs, is the...
Revelations,
the planet of the Old Testament, which was the poisoner of water. That's what wormwood really means. Literally, it means poisoner of water, but it refers to the large planet that wreaked havoc on Earth. And it's interesting, I believe it was Malachi Martin on one of the older Coast to Coast shows, mm-hmm. who said that when the Vatican built its observatory in Arizona, the first one, and they installed a telescope specifically designed to search for comets. And I know some of the astronomers, because they were from the University of Minnesota, they were comet astronomers who staffed that facility when it first opened. Their instructions were to look to see if Hale-Bopp was wormwood.
Hmm.
And so that was Father Malachi Martin's statement. But these were all comet scientists staffing a facility which had a telescope designed to search for comets, which is a very, very different telescope than one that was designed to look for galaxies or even planets. A comet is a very large, diffuse structure in the sky. The type of imaging you need is totally different. The type of tracking you need in the telescope is totally different. It's a totally 100% different animal than any other type of telescope. So it's very interesting that the Vatican built a telescope, st- staffed it with professional astronomers specifically to look for comets.
It's very strange. I mean, you know, a long time ago in a far-off place, maybe, but this strange interest in science all of a sudden, I don't know.
And comets specifically.
Yes. Let's go to east of the Rockies. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, take it away.
Yes. It's funny. Richard C. just mentioned that he thinks the capsules were switched. And, George, you just did a report the other day that the moon rocks came up missing.
Yep, in Virginia Beach.
Yeah. What are the chances of that? I mean, if they're grinding them down to maybe make them in the dust, people to be examining.
Yeah, anything's possible. Did you hear about that, Jim? A NASA instructor had some vials of moon dust, and somebody broke into his van and took them away.
I did not hear about that.
Yep, a couple days ago.
So, now, that would be someone that knew that they were there. That's a totally inside job, sounds like.
Yep, and then what do you do with it? Sell it?
What do you do
with moon dust? Who would buy that? Some rich guy who has all these art collections and things like that, do you think he'd buy actual moon dust? I bet he would.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the things I really learned when I was in the Southern Hemisphere during my youth, is the amount of, say, pilfering, and a lot of these artifacts would go into private collections, and people would pay large amounts of money for, say, Mayan or other types of artifacts. So, yeah, anything like that is a collector's item, and there are collectors with money, and they will buy it, and, yeah.
What do you think a vial of moon dust would go for?
I'm not sure. I know I couldn't afford it.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Possibly.
Maybe.
Possibly.
It depends on how much the guy wants it.
But then again, there could be a false market developed very quickly for, you know, moon dust.
Well, you mean somebody would falsify it?
Get a little of that Utah
clay and
clay and grind it up and, you know, be a going business.
That's very possible, too. Very possible. Jim, we're going to continue with phone calls this hour and chat with you about some of these other things. Interesting theories. We didn't have a lot of time tonight to talk about the sun and its impact on this planet. Are things slowing down up there on the sun, or are they still going to be throwing off these huge coronal mass ejections?
The sun has been relatively quiet for a month or a month and a half. We had some pretty major flaring, impulse flaring going on for a while, and we had those large, large sunspots. And that has somewhat gone away. The sun's been very quiet lately.
Is that a good thing?
Well, maybe a little too quiet. You know, it's hard to say, but we are in the solar minimum, which has been the most unusual solar minimum ever.
It was pretty active up until recently, as you say, and it was a solar minimum during the very active period, right?
Right, right. So predicting the sun has been a risky business, and what it's going to do tomorrow, only the sun knows.
Well, the old saying, the sun will come up tomorrow, Jim.
That's right.
Stay with us. We'll take the rest of your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Well, Alex Jones is our guest on our next Coast to Coast program. We're going to talk about the Bohemian Grove. We're also going to talk about wiretapping of Americans and get Alex's thoughts on some of that. So it's going to be a fiery show. So make sure you're part of Coast to Coast. That's our next Coast to Coast program with Alex Jones as our guest. By the way, we received on the predictions.tv website, www.predictions.tv website, more than 5 million hits in the last several weeks from people wanting to look and get information on the prediction show. So let me just very quickly tell you what's up with that. Wednesday night, final night that you can see it on cable in the United States. February 2nd, it starts in Canada on cable. For those of you who are interested on looking at it because you had satellite, or the rest of you who just can't get it off some specific cable network that you may have, you can get it right off your computer by going to www.predictions.tv. It's available right now, and I think you're allowed to see it 5 times, and they've even reduced the price from the normal fee. So go ahead, take advantage of that if you want. We'll be back in a moment. We'll finish up with phone calls with our guest, James McCanney. And welcome back, James McCanney, our guest. James, by the way, thanks for the program tonight on Coast to Coast. I appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. It's always my pleasure to be on Coast to Coast with you, George. And thank you very much for inviting me on.
Back to the calls. Wild card line, you're on the air with the professor on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George. This is Ken from Dallas.
Hi, Ken.
Hey, in regards to something that Richard said earlier, we know from past experience that the government has not always told us the truth about things. And if NASA is not telling us the truth about what they're actually finding in space, when are we ever going to know the truth? Or is the truth only going to be something for the elite to know, and that the rest of us are just never going to be told the truth about what's out there?
Good question. James, you can take that, and then I'll react to it after that.
Well, I talk about the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and even Tier 4 science in the country. The Tier 1 scientists, you never hear their names. You don't know who they are. They have been elevated into these positions. I know personally some that I knew when they were younger, and all of a sudden I can tell who they are, which ones have been taken into Tier 1 science. And I know the guys that are in the Tier 2 science, you know, a lot of them still working at, say, JPL or Goddard and in universities and associated with NASA. And there's a very clear distinction. The Tier 2 guys have no clue that there's this whole layer of science above them. And the Tier 1 guys sometimes mingle with them, and they act like just normal people, but they seriously know that they have been brought into a different group of people with different equipment, with different facilities. They can walk into an observatory anytime they want, and the other guys have to simply leave. A lot of times they're associated with military or black ops programs, and the data gets split in the middle, and the good stuff goes up, and basically what you're talking about is what's fed through the Tier 2 down to the public. A lot of it is just phony science, and these guys don't recognize it. They spend their lives working on actually much of it very good science, but very misdirected science.
You know, the way I look at it, Jim, is, you know, not everything is a conspiracy, but until they prove to us that they're telling us the truth, you have to question everything. And that's the sad part about it. I would love to believe everything they tell us. I would. So would a lot of people, but you just can't. And history has shown to us that they don't tell us the truth on many things. Now, in this particular case with space, you know, Richard has his theories on why he believes they're holding back information. You have yours. You know, I don't know. On one hand, you would think it would be marvelous to tell people, look, we found live organisms out there. It's great. I think that would help increase their budgets. But on the other hand, I can understand the panic and the pandemonium and everything else.
Well, I think it goes much deeper than that, because you have to understand who pays the bill and who the scientists in these organizations work for. And it goes up the ladder to the people who very much control a lot of things in this world. It's a very strange configuration, but to be in Tier 1, once you go in, you don't go back.
That's true. Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air with James McCanney. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, I have tried and tried and tried to get on the air with some of your guests, George, and I'll tell you what, it just drives me crazy when you can't get on and you've got a really good question and want to know what's going on, and you just can't get on the air.
Well, you made it this time.
Well, I'm first-time caller, but not because I haven't tried.
I understand.
I'm a long-time listener. I'm calling from Kalispell, Montana on 1180 KOFI, and I'd like to make a brief comment about that. I've been trying to get these people out here to run your program all together. We get it split up because of prior programming conflicts. We get the last part of your show at between 3 and 5 o'clock in the morning, so sometimes it's kind of puzzling what's going on. It takes a while to understand what the show is about. But anyway, my question for James McKinney, a previous caller in the last half hour mentioned something about controlling the weather, and it just drove me crazy. I didn't think I was going to be able to get through. But do you think that there is the technology to control the weather on hurricanes, which was on a program a while back?
Mm-hmm.
It was brought up.
Had the weatherman, Scott Stevens, remember that?
Yeah, right. Was controlling the weather and could actually control these hurricanes to move into, like, the Gulf of Mexico and just tear that whole country up. What is your view on that?
Absolutely. I have a book that's on my webpage. It's called Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, and the title sounds a little bit foreboding, but it's written for the general public. In there, I have a chapter specifically on weather control, but it builds up and explains what really causes weather. For example, hurricanes are not caused by warm water, one of the great myths of modern meteorology. They're really driven by electrical currents from the ionosphere. And when you realize that, if you can influence those electrical currents, then you can influence the hurricane. And there are ways to do that. There are numerous ways to do it. The easiest one is with a laser in orbit above the Earth. And in fact, you can lead those hurricanes around like a bull with a ring in its nose. So all of that's possible. You can increase the energy. You can break the hurricane up. You can do a lot of things. And I was working on this technology with the Russians back in the 90s. We literally gave it to the U.S. military to drag these hurricanes offshore. But anyway, to make a long story short, yes, there is weather manipulation. It's known. The principles are well known. And there's a lot of misinformation floating around about weather manipulation. And
well, another thing you and Hoagland would agree on, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no question that it exists. It's there. There have been numerous programs. It went black ops underground, so to speak, back in the somewhere in the late 90s, where the current technology and the big laser satellites were launched around the year 2000. So there's no question that it exists.
There was a budget for it at the time. Then they claimed that they ended it, but I'm not sure about that.
Well, but there's budgets and there's budgets.
Yeah, absolutely. First time caller line, it's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is John, driving a big rig up by fire.
All right, John, welcome to the program. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, I got you on a KEX out of Portland, a 50,000-watt blowtorch.
Oh, yeah, it's a monster.
We get that all the way down to Sacramento. Hey, I got an idea. I agree with Richard on the swap, and I was wondering what your guest would think of the Tier 1 scientists wanting to release some information to the Tier 2 scientists, and this is the way they can do it. Maybe they got some alien DNA that they can't explain how they got it, when they got it, where they got it, and now they can get it out to the public.
That's a scenario, and I don't know specifically if that would be a real one. There's no question that there are viruses in space. Once you get to the virus level, you're dealing with organisms that can reproduce, and where it goes from there, who knows? But you have to understand it's within the realm of the direction of what these people do. We have underground labs where they deal with viruses, and one of the big areas is space viruses. This has been known for a long time. So there's no question that there's a great interest in black ops and in biology and in microbiology in these organisms. So
I find that to be actually a good match, yes.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. It's Andrew calling from Roundup, Montana tonight.
Hi, Andrew.
Good to talk to you again. I'm one of those produce drivers that Sylvia Brown was talking about a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
I want to get right to the point here for Jim. You might have saw something that I was curious about on Friday the 13th, the conjuncture we have with Venus. How often does that happen?
Oh, it's about every, I forget what it is. Is it 500 and some days? I can't remember specifically. It takes, our year is 365 days, and then it takes a while for Venus to catch up to us. So it's, I don't have the exact number. I should.
A friend of mine in Seattle came down with flu over that weekend, and he says it happens every couple of years or so, and my back was bothering me on Friday the 13th. Like, hadn't bothered me for a while.
Well, viruses take many forms, and they can affect you in many ways, but the typical thing is a flu-type dizziness, respiratory. Those are the typical, what the Chinese call, oddly enough, they call it the swine flu, or there's various other names for it. But literally, the implication is that it's from the inferior conjunction of Venus.
Right.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate you being on the program. Clock's ticking. Final calls. We'll go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, this is Warren from Greer, South Carolina.
Hi, Warren. How are you?
Pretty good, and thank you for taking my call tonight real quick. I have basically a real quick comment and a real quick question, and it really probably is directed toward Richard Hogan, but I guess I would fall under your Tier 2 research, and there's a lot of areas that I'm sure you're interested in we cover, but my main question has to do with, first off, Hogan has a hyperdimensional physics, and I just wanted to let him know that I have taken it to a higher level. If you wanted to look at my 4D unified map just between him and I and to see what he thinks about it, when we get time, I'll get in contact with him later.
Okay.
My main question to ask him was on the artifacts that he had seen or he's going to, I guess, release on Mars. There's a friend of mine named Ted, who's a researcher at Rochester University in New York, and he's released a book that actually covers all the photographs of NASA's photographs showing in detail these artifacts. And he's tried to present this to your producer, but he's never got a comment back from you all.
Hmm.
And I was just wondering if, you know, check with your producer and maybe get with Hogan and get with Ted and
okay.
See if they could really have a good show for you.
All right. Sure will.
Okay.
All right. That's it. Short and sweet. Thanks. Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, this is Juanita Barone calling from Fort Bragg, California.
Hi, Juanita.
Hi. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you and get this out to the public. And many people know already, but I have a friend named Rosalind Peterson in Redwood Valley, California. And she used to work for the Department of Agriculture, and she does not now. But she's had me bring petitions downtown and about the chemtrails. And we have been blitzed tonight. It's just so incredible. Starting again at 12:45 on up till after 1 in the morning, one jet after another, 2 to 3 minutes, they come by here and they're seeding the clouds and causing torrential rains over here. And we've got mold and our bones ache and we don't know what to do anymore.
And it's obvious
it's
you
like
don't.
A dictatorship like the reincarnation of Hitler. I just can't believe what this government is doing. I mean, and now they got two bills that are going to be passed. It's 517, and I think that's the Senate bill, and the House bill is 2995. And that's going to add on to the weather modification plan.
Right, right.
Around the world, they're doing this. What can we do? I mean, this is sick. No sunshine. People are even telling me they really believe the Bible now and that we are getting close to the end of the world as we know it. Like the quickening. I believe it now.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, there are a lot of people that think that. It's a collective thought, I would say. And my personal belief is that it's amazing the number of I don't know if you'd call them prophecies or projections that are all occurring at this time. And it's a critical time in our species as we're trying to step off into outer space and trying to get a handle on what we call government, where the government has taken the resources we've provided to for our self-governance and used them for themselves. So it's a very bizarre situation. My personal read on it is that the populace, it's a kind of an experiment to see if the populace can actually control and govern themselves and control their leaders, because if not, we're not going to get into outer space and nobody's going to let us out there.
Well, that's true, too. Jim, we're rapidly approaching the end of the program. Why don't you give your website out, sir?
It's, of course, linked on the Coast to Coast site. It's www.jmccannyscience.com. And for listeners who like to use mail, I've got this CD of the four-part Planet X series with the 10-minute clip of Velikovsky and some the tsunami lecture. Anyway, the mail order address is JMCC PO Box 58, Navarre, Navarre, Minnesota 55392. And $28 includes shipping for that CD, and it includes the Surviving Planet X pamphlet for free.
And you've got all that information also on your site?
All on the website there also, absolutely.
Very good. Jim, thanks for being on the program. I appreciate it. Valuable information.
Well, George, it's always great to be able to be on Coast to Coast, and it's my privilege.
All right, you take care. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Professor James McCanny, I love his views. I really do. On our next program, Alex Jones. So get ready for that one. We're going to talk about a number of subjects. All of them affect you. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Apunnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.